Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
On this episode of Narcissist Apocalypse Q&A, we talk with Dr. Ryan Sultan about trauma, trauma therapies, and empowerment. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse Q&A, everyone. I am Brandon Chadwick, and with me today, we have Dr. Ryan Sultan. How are you?
I'm good. It was nice and sunny today here in New York, which has been a change for this time of year.
Well, we're having a snowstorm right now here in Toronto, but I'm happy that you're in a sunny place, and today we're going to talk about trauma. All things related to trauma as a whole, as a broad topic. And we're also going to talk about the different types of therapies for trauma as well. And for those of you that don't know who you are, you're a psychiatrist. You specialize in trauma and its psychological impacts. Completed your undergraduate studies at Trinity College, Harvard, followed by a medical degree from Drexel University College of Medicine. Postgraduate journey includes fellowships at the New York Presbyterian Hospital and Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. Thank you for being here with us today. And I guess I'm going to pass it off to you as, you know, let's talk about trauma. What is trauma? And go from there.
So I think trauma is a really interesting and like super broad topic. And it's something that we've been thinking about in the field of mental health for a long time. You know, I think it starts at this idea of like, how does experiences that occur to us that over the course of our lifetime, or even before that, or even actually even our parents' lifetime, how can those things be sort of shaping us? And we've changed our ideas on that a lot. From it used to be an idea around, well, you know, the things that happened to you in your childhood, the stuff that's happened to you maybe more in adulthood. We've realized the stuff that happens to you, you know, before you're born, like when you're actually developing as a fetus, and even things that happen to your parents that can turn on genes on and off. Trauma is like a broad topic. And then I think we can narrow it a little more to sort of what people are often talking about, kind of like big T acute trauma versus like little T chronic complex trauma, which is at its simplest kind of a differentiation between the more original definition of PTSD, which is usually referring to like a specific life-threatening event that may have occurred to someone. Most commonly, people would think about war, and you know, we used to call it shell shock in the past, where you're now reliving that experience and you feel like you're there again and you can't differentiate between that and reality. So this very specific event that's occurred to you or set of events versus a more complex trauma, which is more developmental in origin, which is more what has been happening to you for a period of time over and over again, perhaps usually in an interpersonal relationship with a close person, a romantic relationship, a family member, And how has that actually affected you? And it's important, I think, to think about them a little bit differently, because because the way we treat them is also different too.
So can you elaborate on the different ways of treating them?
You know, you first want to sort of think about which category you think the trauma is fitting into. And people can be in both categories. You can have complex trauma and you can have like an acute PTSD trauma. When people talk about narcissism, which is, you know, a big focus for you, they're usually talking about something related to a complex trauma, something that's occurred to someone chronically over a period of time with an individual, and a set of behaviors that they've engaged in that has caused damage to the person on the receiving end of that. So, you know, when we think about how to deal with it, so the early ideas around trauma come from, as like Fernberg and Philhut, they were like these psychoanalysts in like the early 1900s. And so they had a number of different ideas around like psychoanalysis and how you might like actually treat trauma. And so like our first ideas about how to treat trauma came from, hey, can we think about what's going on and understand it at a more conscious level, and then actually use that to kind of realign our mind around something in a way that we're able to work through it and process it. So that's sort of like a classical way. Those are usually what people are thinking of, like if you're thinking of almost a stereotype version of psychotherapy. If you've seen like a New Yorker cartoon where someone's like laying on a couch talking to like an old guy with a beard. But you know, things have changed and we've developed a number of other things. And I would slip them into like large categories. The one version of it is one that's really thinking about the physiology associated with trauma. So your autonomic nervous system. So think about that autonomic nervous system. Some of us may remember this from biology, idea of like a fight or flight response. There are these changes that are occurring where your stress hormones are going up, your heart rate's going up, your body is getting into this mode where it's like, hey, like I'm ready to deal with whatever's coming at me. It's not a state of relaxation. You know, it's a state to deal with a crisis. And from an evolutionary point of view, it's a useful thing that we have. You know, if you're your ancestors wandering around in sub-Saharan Africa and you like encounter like a lion or like a snake, like you want to be ready to go and handle that. What can occur though in the case of trauma, and this occurs in both the acute trauma as well as for many people in a more chronic or complex trauma, is that system, which is there to protect us, kind of gets hijacked by chronic complex trauma that we've had, in a way that you are having these physiological responses occurring for you at times that are really now inappropriate and they're problematic. You feel terrible because of it, right? This is not a state that you want to be in for any period of time. And it's actually, we know from studies that it's a very unhealthy state to stay in for any period of time. So some therapies are like, how do we handle that? How can we target that actual experience in a way to help the person? So like somatic experiencing and like sensory motor psychotherapies are much more thinking about the body and physiologically what's going on with you and the sensations and when you're having those sensations, how are you responding to them and kind of reframing them in a way that they don't have they're maybe not sort of physiologically triggering for a person. So the hyperarousal, we're trying to sort of disconnect the autonomic dysregulation, all the sort of like physiological things associated with it. And you can be doing mindfulness skills related to that. There's any number of things that we can be doing with that. And it's super helpful and effective. And I like that treatment because it's concentrating on like a clear biological target for the person. And, you know, at its like simplest, it's essentially like, how do you manage stress responses in your body? So they're actually useful for all kinds of things outside of trauma. So then one is sort of thinking about it physiologically. Then there's the idea of thinking about it more like cognitively. So how do you think about your and process your thoughts on something? So that's really like a CBT-based model, a cognitive behavioral therapy model. And there are multiple psychotherapies that come out of CBT. CBT has been revised into multiple different things. So there's cognitive processing therapy, there's trauma-focused CBT therapy. They're all using this cognitive behavioral model to try to like identify and reframe thoughts that you may have related to your trauma. So how can you think about something in a less distressing way? I'll give you like a really simple example. You know, I live in New York. I'm a simple guy. I'm a single guy. You know, and I'm like trying to go out on dates. I'm on whatever app. And you try to connect with someone. And, you know, I've had plenty of experiences where like it doesn't work out. Someone stops talking to you. You never connect with them, whatever. And it's easy for that to be potentially triggering to me if I feel like, oh, you know, no one's interested in me. No one wants to go out with me. I'm not likable. It's been reinforced maybe. You know, like I'm in New York City. There's like, this is happening all the time. Everyone's super busy. So if I want to reframe that cognitively, well, instead of getting upset at the person, sending some sort of dysregulated, upset message to them, getting frustrated with them, you know, I might be able to reframe it in my mind and say, hey, look, you know what? Like, these people don't even know me. They've never met me. I'm basically a stranger. We were trying to set up a time to meet. They're busy. I'm busy too. We didn't connect. It doesn't really have much to do with me. It's not helpful for me to get stuck on that. Like, I'm just going to sort of like move forward with my life. And you know, if something works out with them, if I meet them in the future, maybe it'll work out. So that's thinking about it cognitively. Another way is to sort of do something similar, but do it in a little more kind of an emotionally oriented way, which is more spending some time on your feelings related to this, a bit more into sort of an emotionally focused realm. And that falls into a couple of different categories. You can certainly do that in like a more psychodynamic psychotherapy. You can do that in a more schema therapy. You want to be thinking about these experiences, processing the feelings on them, reprocessing them in another way. And you can do something like that with a CBT model as well. So that's sort of an underlying concept that you can get into with it. Probably my favorite is this thing called EMDR. I think EMDR is like the coolest thing ever. It's like magic. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. So eye movement, desensitization, reprocessing. It's essentially this really interesting idea that works really well where when you're following this set of movements with your eyes that the therapist is helping guide you on, that seems to do something that allows you, and maybe it dissociates you a little bit, which means it's sort of like your mind and body feel a little bit disconnected in a way that allows you to sort of access what was upsetting to you in a way that it can be a little bit decoupled and you can sort of re-experience it in a matter where the traumatic memory seems to not have the same power over you that it did before. I have to say again, it's sort of like magic, right? Because you're literally just watching someone move their finger around and your eyes are following them while you're engaging in psychotherapy. But it's actually super, super, super effective. We just hired someone in my practice that's like the main thing that she does. It's been really great to have that as an opportunity for people.
What is the science behind it? Or is it magic?
I mean, it's not magic. The science behind it is thinking that when you engage in these EMDR techniques, that you are accessing some sort of neurological thing at a more basic level. I think of it like a backdoor to your mind that allows you to sort of almost like with a cheat code, like access things that are otherwise not accessible. That's how I would sort of explain it. And that by doing that, you're sort of, you're maybe creating like a dissociated state, which is interesting because that's another thing that we're using a lot with ketamine assisted psychotherapy, which is not something that has been, that is not considered a mainstream trauma treatment at the moment, but is kind of like a growing, exciting area of trauma treatment. It's a really exciting thing that we kind of stumbled upon in the early 2000s. They got this idea that ketamine seemed to relieve depressive symptoms and suicidality. These guys, John Crystal, I think at Yale, kind of came up with this. And then it was originally thought of as, can we use this for people that are acutely suicidal? Because a lot of times, you know, in psychiatric evaluations, you end up with people that are in the emergency room and they're acutely suicidal. And you're like, well, what can we do for them other than hold them here? Just like for safety purposes, which isn't really therapeutic, right? Like it's really more of like a stopgap. And so they were thinking that, you know, can this be used to sort of get people feeling better more quickly than like an antidepressant or psychotherapy that's not going to work quickly? And then it's increasingly been found to be integrated into psychotherapy. And one of the cool things that they've shown is like if you and this has been really seen well in like rodent models, like if you take these poor like mice, they like stress the mice out like crazy. And then they give some of them ketamine and you like look at their brains after and you can see the ones that got the ketamine actually regrow neurons in their brain. The ones that didn't get it don't. Because like stress, trauma, for instance, like it's going to cause that kind of like retreat of your brain is highly associated with depression. And that's super cool. Like I'm 39. So like when I was in high school, I was definitely taught that the brain is not able to regrow in any way. And like, that is wrong. Like neurons can actually regrow and that we actually have some stuff that seems to be associated with improving that regrowth. So the ketamine assisted psychotherapy, which is kind of my other favorite after EMDR, can be combined, which is one of the things I like about it, with any number of other psychotherapies, because the idea behind it is two things. There's one is like the one where we're using it to try to rapidly improve depressive symptoms. That first thing I was talking about, which is already a fairly low dose of it compared to its original use, which is anesthesia. Then in a psychotherapy model, you can give an even smaller amount, very, very, very little. Often people will give it in like a little intramuscular injection. And a lot of times the patients don't even feel anything. They report that they don't feel any different. It seems to sort of like lower your defenses, lower the sort of like barriers and walls and shields that we all have up that, you know, make us guarded, that make it hard to talk about things, to share things, to be in touch with. I think the lower that just a little bit, so that when you actually try to engage in a psychotherapy, it seems to facilitate progress in the psychotherapy much more quickly. And also that you're able to sort of think about things differently and like reframe them. So like in going back to some of these other therapies, like, you know, if you have let's say you were in a relationship with someone that was a really unhealthy relationship. And at the time, you know, you maybe didn't realize that you stayed in that relationship for a long time. You know, you now realize, or you're trying to wrap your head around the idea often that this was not a good relationship for you, but that it's left you with certain scars. Now you can start thinking about it in a different way and accepting the idea maybe that the relationship wasn't healthy, that there were things that this person did to you that were unkind, that were hurtful, that were manipulative, that took advantage of you. You're able to sort of accept that, understand that, and then hopefully actually move further along that process and start to say, okay, well, yes, that happened to me. And, you know, I realized that that was a negative experience for me, and that was really painful. But actually, I'm not going to let that dictate my life, that I'm going to be able to think about this in a different way. I'm going to be able to be open and vulnerable with another person again, but I'm going to be more mindful of how they might interact with me, that this isn't going to define me, that there are other relationships that might be helpful or wonderful and rewarding, and there are kind people out there that can be part of my life again.
So I've been doing this show for a while. I get a lot of requests from people to be on our Q&A episodes. And there's something called spiritual bypassing in like spiritual communities where people don't go through their problems. They're dancing around their problems. So I see a lot of people making requests of a lot of different types of therapies, and I'm doing a quote, like air quotes here, of I don't know what these things are. So are there certain types of quote-unquote therapies that people are peddling that are like a form of spiritual bypassing, if that makes sense?
So you're thinking of the term spiritual bypassing as like a problematic,
yes,
as a problematic framing of this. Okay, so wow, all right, so like there's like I feel like there's like a Pandora's box that I'm trying not to open entirely, because like we don't have like 6 weeks to talk about so many thoughts on this. I'm trying to sort of pull them together. So
because the thing that we don't want is people to be re-traumatized, and we want people to go through what's happened in a trauma-informed way to do our best to send people in the right direction so they don't get into the hands of the wrong people. That's why I'm asking this question to you, because you're qualified to answer this question.
Yeah,
and so Pandora's box, go open it.
Let me give you the shortest version answer. A significant amount of effort has been put into using good scientific, rigorous methods to demonstrate efficacies of psychotherapy. Historically, psychotherapy was people were very judgmental of it. They thought the whole thing was voodoo. And so a lot of effort has been put into say what things have science to back them. And everything we talked about today has science back it. Like you can go onto Google Scholar and you can use these terms and look them up, and you'll see that people have run studies demonstrating that this stuff is effective. So the short answer is like, if there's something you want to go after, you want to be looking for an evidence basis, the term that we use in the field, is really where you want to be going. That said, it's important to remember that healing from these things is probably a little more complicated than that. There's been a tremendous amount of work done on the idea that at its core, success in any psychotherapy is really related to the relationship that you have with the therapist, and that the relationship in and of itself is healing, and that the individual modalities are sort of facilitating that. But the dynamic is helpful. Which brings to another idea, which is starting to get into the Pandora's box, which is this idea of like drift that occurs in psychotherapy. So I always encourage people to be mindful of this when they're in psychotherapy. You know, like what are you actually doing in psychotherapy? You should know what type of psychotherapy that you're in. Your therapist should be able to describe that in some kind of thoughtful way. And it should feel like you have a plan and a track that you're on, as opposed to when drift starts to happen where, and you know, you may have started someplace that was reasonable, but the therapy has drifted into something else or not anything clearly. And that's where I worry as it sounds like you do, about the therapy, the worst being re-traumatizing, on a softer side, just being not particularly helpful, right? And which is actually dangerous in and of itself, because if you go to treatment with a mental health person and you're doing things that aren't helpful for you or aren't targeting what you need help with, or that in and of itself is problematic because it leaves you feeling that there isn't anyone to help you, right? You put all this effort into something and it's not getting you anywhere. And so you may leave it thinking there is nothing that can help me. There is no one that can help me. I am in fact like powerless in this situation, rather than it realizing that it may not be that you're in, you may not be getting the kind of treatment that's actually going to be helpful for you.
So when we think of a trauma-informed therapist, you know, how have things changed and what should we be thinking or looking for now?
Not that long ago, there was probably a larger population of mental health clinicians that I think had less experience thinking about people's struggles with trauma in mind, like being able to think about it in that kind of lens. And therefore, maybe we're not engaging in as validating a space around that. I think that that's probably, to me, the most basic definition of that. And I think one level higher would be an evidence-based trauma treatment. So are you trained and experienced in doing something trauma-focused, CBT, EMDR, any of these treatments that have a scientific basis for them? And those all have built into them that they are trauma-informed.
So one of the goals of this therapy, which is supposed to be a collaborative effort between therapist and client, is, as we stated, to not re-traumatize the client, the person that's being traumatized. But I know you feel strongly about empowerment. So tell us more of your thoughts on this.
I think empowerment is really, really important, because I think trauma is an inherently, it creates an inherent sense of powerlessness for people. But how do you validate people in a way that helps them develop stronger resilience, a more stable sense of self and self-esteem? Because those things are typically rattled and sort of cracked open by trauma.
And what I think a bit of what the show does, if I really think about empowerment, and I really just haven't really thought about it a lot until just now, I think we try to get people to understand their stories a bit more and the trauma that's occurred. And, you know, I guess knowledge is empowering. And then within our stories, we hear a lot of people figuring out, you know, how to take their power back, whether it be saying no for the first time, setting boundaries, retaking up hobbies that they once liked that they weren't allowed to do, or just, you know, finding out who they are again. And I think we are helping facilitate the process of becoming stronger and more confident, especially, you know, in controlling your life and like claiming your rights back. However, I think, you know, empowerment might be a privileged thing, because when we're talking about getting therapy or support, we have to discuss inequality and specifically financial, because that's a big barrier to leaving a relationship when it's an abusive relationship, but it's also a big barrier as far as getting help when it comes to trauma in the aftermath. And if you're having financial issues and you were talking about empowerment, you know, right there, your empowerment can be taken away because the system as a whole isn't set up for you.
Yep. Huge problem. It's hard to get access. Huge problem. And because it's expensive, right? Like mental health treatment is so expensive. It's time consuming. So it's not just the money. It's also like, you know, I'm a single mom, you know, living in Washington Heights, an area here in New York, you know, and, you know, you want me to come in. I have insurance. I'm on a state funded insurance. I could get an appointment. I have an appointment at Columbia University with great people, but that appointment is, it's in the middle of the day. And I have like a job that it, like many jobs that I can't just leave once or twice a week, in the middle of the day for hours and go to my treatment. So even if there isn't the financial barrier from the literally like the treatment cost, there's these like logistical barriers, you know, so linked to financial ones. Access is such a problem for people.
And that's why I think like shows like this and other podcasts that are in the same vein, even though they are not a replacement for trauma therapy at all, this isn't therapy. It is a validation, and it is a way to get a sense of empowerment. And there are also support groups out there, like our support group that we have, which is peer run, to get that validation and get some empowerment from, you know, fellow survivors, as well as other options that are not therapy options when it comes to feeling empowered and getting that feeling back. Books can be involved in that as well, specifically when it comes to real knowledge-based stuff and gaining knowledge of situations. We use examples from the book by Lundy Bancroft, Why Does He Do That All the Time? And, you know, knowledge is a big way to get power and empowerment back. So, you know, with all that being said and everything we've done today, what else is, you know, going on with you, your practice? Tell us everything before we leave today.
My interests are currently, I'm at Columbia University, and I'm a research professor there. And then I direct a private clinic called Integrative Psych in Chelsea, where we have a lot of trauma-focused therapies, like we were discussing earlier, for individuals both doing psychopharm, lifestyle changes, and psychotherapies and behavioral changes.
And that can be found at integrative-psych.org. So, Dr. Ryan Sultan, I really want to thank you for being our guest here today and talking about all things trauma. I learned a lot, and I really can't thank you enough for being here and educating me and our whole entire community. So a big, big thank you for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was a stimulating conversation for me too.
So once again, thank you, Dr. Sultan, for being a guest on our show today. And if you want to be a guest on our Survivor Story episodes, please do go to narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's a button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page. And there you can read all of our instructions and either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button. And please do send it in the format that we ask for. Also, at our website, we have a support group. So if you need support, we have a support group at our website. Go to our website at narcissistapocalypse.com. Click the support group button at the top of the page. Inside, you'll see that we have Zoom meetings every Wednesday night, Thursday afternoons, and Saturday nights. We also have forum boards for you to post on to get the validation that you need from survivors just like you. It is a wonderful group of people on there, and you can make a lot of friends too. So if you need support, join our support group today. And we have friends of the show called Shelter Movers, and everyone's Shelter Movers can be found at sheltermovers.com. And what they do is they try to help you move all of your stuff from your home and into storage. So if you're someone that is in a coercive control situation, domestic violence situation, and you need to get all of your things out of your home, sheltermovers.com can help you. And they can do this for your pets and livestock too. So if you're trying to get out of domestic violence and coercive control, you need help leaving your home, then sheltermovers.com can help you. And they are currently only in Canada, and it is a donor-supported charitable organization. So if you need help from them or just want to donate to them, go to sheltermovers.com. And then when it comes to another support, if you go to domesticshelters.org, they have articles and resources to help you make sense of everything that you're dealing with. They have every phone number and email address, web address for shelters and agencies, no matter how big or small the town you're in. Domesticshelters.org has it there. So if you need extra support, please go to domesticshelters.org. And that is it for today's episode. So I hope you found it helpful. And from myself and Dr. Sultan, we hope you have a good night.